Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, hour two, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. In a very good mood today. Not going to lie. Humble Colin, which you're used to, obviously. Those days are over. Obnoxious Colin is sitting in the chair. Very, very good weekend for Trojan fans across America.
It was a great weekend for college football.
Oh, my gosh. Rivalry Friday and Saturday. Oh, it was fan. And by the way, the game nobody talked about. Remember about a month ago I said, keep your eye on Oklahoma State. Most underrated team in the country is Oklahoma State. Nobody talked about that game because it was later. That game was nuts.
It was a very
upsets
crazy weekend.
Everywhere. That was arguably one of the best two-day stretches of college football in my adult life. It was insane.
That's what you want. We have a little bit of parody now.
Yes.
And it's making it really exciting.
All right. Colin Wright, Colin Wrong, brought to you by Jersey Mike's. The holiday season, give the gift. You'll know they'll love a gift from Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, a sub above. Just a click, few buttons, download the app, get your sandwiches. All right, here we go. Colin Wright, Colin Wrong.
Where Colin was right.
I said 4 weeks ago when Green Bay was missing 11 starters and beat Arizona in the desert. I said, folks, this team is loaded. This is the best team in the NFL. They've been number one in my Herd hierarchy. They're loaded on defense. They're not even playing their best corner and their best linebacker. They're two best players. They get a pass rush. This is the best team in football right now. The only question is, will there be any more key injuries? The fact that they lost a Pro Bowl center to the Chargers and their tight end for the season, both great players, and it's had no ill effects is remarkable. We called it 4 weeks ago with that win in Arizona. We said that's the best win of the year in the National Football League. Do not forget that win. And I think the Packers are easily today, easily the best team in the NFL.
Where Colin was wrong.
Now, if I could just pick games, my Blazing Five went into the tank again after some real momentum. Thank God for the Denver Broncos. What was I doing betting on the Houston Texans? What was I doing? Shame on me.
Where Colin was right.
I predicted trouble. I said, sit Baker Mayfield. Do not play him. Bye week. Get him healthy. Well, instead he comes out. You know, he's hobbled. He's lost his confidence. Wide receiver drops. This is now you got a dad picking on him. Get him healthy. I didn't like them playing him on the road, hyper-aggressive defense, big physical rivalry game, and now this morning the wheels have come off, the team's broken, people calling him out. I thought the Browns were much better sitting him, going with Case Keenum, getting Baker healthy. I mean, folks, he's not just missing receivers. He's missing them by 15 yards. He is hurt.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've never seen a coach who's dominating at an A program leave for another A program. Lincoln Riley getting the USC job is amazing, but it shocked me. If you're winning at Georgia, you don't go to Notre Dame. If you're winning at Michigan, you don't go to Georgia. Like, it just doesn't happen. There's like 8 great jobs in college football. Oklahoma and USC are 2 of them. I was shocked by the move. I've never seen it before. If you're winning at a top 8 program, you don't go to anywhere but the NFL. But I think it's the right move. I think everybody in the South plays second fiddle at minimum to Nick Saban. And I think the future of football is on the offensive side. And like Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley will be front and center to one of the top 6 to 7 brands in college sports. But it shocked me. I didn't even hear the name until this weekend.
Where Colin was right.
I said before the season with New England, smart people bet on them. They always figure it out. Here's New England again. They're not asking. Everybody's falling in love with Mac Jones. They're not asking him to do much. They really not. And by the way, he deserves credit, but They got the best coach in football. They got the best culture in football. They probably have the best offensive coordinator in football. And I said before the year, I like their offensive line. I like their run game. I just didn't think they were dynamic enough on the outside. Now, they spent a lot of money on the offense. It's still not very dynamic, but it's better. Kendrick Bourne, Nelson Aguilar, Hunter Henry. It's better. Not great, but it's better. And we said, just trust smart people to figure it out. They usually do very quickly. And once again, I think New England right now is the best team in the AFC.
Where Colin was right.
Can we move on, Pittsburgh? Like the Big Ben thing. It's over. I mean, he's not their only problem. But this team has real tight end talent and real wide receiver talent and real running back talent. He should not be throwing the ball over 24 times a game. He's old. Prehistoric. And again, nobody's saying it's all Ben. But they're 22nd in offense. And that was embarrassing. And for the record, the Cincinnati Bengals stole a page from the Steelers book. They just ran the football. They had more rushing yards than they did passing yards. So that tells you when Cincinnati's more dynamic throwing and they can run the ball better. Why? Because they have the right quarterback. They have an offensive coach that gets it. This is, it's over. Like, go get a quarterback. And by the way, this is the way it had to end. Because if Ben would have been really good this year, he'd fight like mad to get a new contract. It needed to end this way, where he can't argue it, his agent can't argue it, Burrow's better, Lamar's better. It had to end this way to move on from Big Ben.
Where Colin was wrong.
It is amazing that without Amari Cooper, Dak just never quite feels the same, but I was just too high on the Cowboys. Derek Carr, without Darren Waller and without Henry Ruggs, tore them apart. It's what happens in football is the longer a season goes, the more good coaches can pick you apart, and their secondary now in Dallas has become a liability. And can we just say this now? And this is not a hot take. Tony Pollard's better than Zeke. Like, Tony Pollard, you watch the kickoff, you watch the game. He's faster, he's twitchier, he's healthier, he's quicker. Tony Pollard should be getting a majority of the touches, not Zeke.
Where Colin was right.
I've been defending Jim Harbaugh for like 6 years. Now, it's his 11th win. It's the fourth year at Michigan with 10-plus wins. Listen, historically, they don't have Alabama, USC, Ohio State talent. But if you win 9 and 10 games at Michigan, you're an excellent coach. So let's now, in review, look at Jim Harbaugh's career. He goes to San Diego, they win. He goes to Stanford, they win. How is Stanford today without Harbaugh? He goes to San Francisco, gets him to a Super Bowl. He goes to Michigan, and they win 11 games. Everybody is so impatient. It took Dabo Sweeney at a football school 4 years to get it rolling. It took Brian Kelly at Notre Dame like 4 to 5 years to really figure out his identity. Now, Michigan still has to get better at quarterback. What's remarkable is he's been this successful without really hitting it out of the park at quarterback. And Michigan should have good quarterbacks. It's a great academic school. It's a great school. There's plenty of good quarterbacks throughout this country. It's a great school. But we have been so impatient with Harbaugh. It's just societally, let stuff bake a little. He's been winning 9-10 games. It's not like he's winning 4. It's not like it's Sark and he's on a 6-game losing streak or 5-game losing streak.
Where Colin was right.
I said it after 3 games. It's not complicated. The Lakers are too old to defend. And the Suns are so athletic, and the Warriors are so athletic. Lakers are not getting to the Western Conference Finals. Like, they're too old. They are second worst defense in the NBA, and they're struggling now against bad teams. They've played the 30th most difficult schedule. They haven't seen a steady diet of the Warriors and the Suns yet. They're too old. They have an old bench. The Laker fans are like, well, we'll make a move at the trade deadline. What move could you make to be able to shoot like the Warriors or defend and space and be as athletic as the Suns? This is at best the third best team in the West, and that's if Anthony Davis stays healthy and you trust Westbrook in crisis to make good decisions. Like, they're too old. They're just too old. And it's not the offensive end. I think they can get to 106 points if LeBron's healthy and AD's healthy. But in this league now, which is a shooting and spacing league, they just cannot get to the perimeter. They gave up KCP. They gave up Alex Caruso. Terrific defenders that gave you a great defensive effort every night. You're not getting the trading deadline to solve that. And I don't want to hear about Trevor Ariza. That's not solving your issues. Lakers, 4-6 in their last 10 against mostly second-tier teams. This is what they are. This is what they are. They can't stop anybody. Sometimes I love being wrong. I love being wrong on Lincoln Riley to USC. I got a text the night before from somebody who's been a valued friend and source, and he said, it's not Matt Campbell. Do not believe these media reports. It is not Matt Campbell. That's not who it is.
Whew.
I may have to buy some more season tickets. Oh, sorry, I forgot I was on the air. Just having a conversation with myself here.
Are we going to see you on the sideline?
See me? I'm going to be in Lincoln Riley's ear. Screen pass. Lincoln, screen pass. See me on the side. I called two buddies last night. I'm like, all right, it's time to buy a suite. They're back.
Whoa.
Yeah,
we're back?
You'll be invited.
Well,
when Miami and USC are in the national championship, when Lane takes that job.
Lovely. You still owe me tickets to LAFC.
Oh, my gosh, you're right about that. Just feel bad. How about I get you... You know, let's go.
I'll take suite tickets to USC. It's fine. I just don't want to go to an
at this point, Joy and I are just having a conversation. The fact that we're on the air is secondary. We're just enjoying
ourselves.
We're
just making plans.
All right. Trent Dilfer's around the corner on a Monday. I'm interested to hear what he says about it's amazing how much more comfortable Brady is when he's got Gronk and Lenny. It's incredible. It's like he's as great as he is, these quarterbacks – They need their security blankets. Like Leonard Fournette's pounding runs out, you're like, Brady's just, you can tell his body language. He just feels much better.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Saturday, after finally beating Ohio State, Jim Harbaugh leads his fifth-ranked Michigan Wolverines into their first ever Big Ten championship game, looking to punch their ticket to the playoffs. Against number 16, Iowa, coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
I have no problem acknowledging that I really loved Michigan beating Ohio State because I loved the sport, not just a team, and it was really good for everybody. That you don't want a conference to be a one-team conference. Like, it's good for Georgia to house Alabama here in the SEC championship. It's good. It just knock them back. It's like, okay, somebody else can come out of that conference. You know, that's the problem with the ACC for years. It's like, it's just too Clemson dominated. They rarely play close games. It's not good for a conference. So like Michigan winning, I know Buckeye fan won't see the macro to it, but it's great. Every network executive in America was like, yes, let's spread it. This has been the year in college football of parity. Like the rival, the underdog rival, the Oklahoma State, the Michigan can pick up the W. Auburn should have won their game.
Well, the point of sports is competition.
Right.
If you feel like there's no chance for you to be competitive, the story isn't compelling.
Yeah, except USC. I want them winning every year. That's the only exception to that. Trent Dilfer, 15 years in the NFL, a Super Bowl, you know that. Got a podcast, too, Beyond the X's and O's with Trent Dilfer. You know, that debacle I was watching last night, I'm like, boy, I must love the NFL because I can't turn it off. And I was saying, I guess my concern would be this. Lamar has such a high ceiling that, and he's got a short memory. He can be awful and then come back the next series and he's not affected by it. So there is value to having a short memory, and he's very good at that. But boy, Trent, there some of those throws last night, I'm like, what's it going to be like against Belichick's defense? I worry that there's a little bit of him has been deciphered. A little bit of him has been solved. That's what I'm seeing. Am I off on that? Right, wrong? Where am I on that?
I think you're right on, but I think the next part of the conversation is really important. I totally agree with you. Teams are adapting, not giving them these defined looks in the secondary. They're mixing up looks, making throwing the ball harder. But the one thing Lamar has done from high school to college, from college to the NFL, and his time in the NFL, is he's evolved. And I think he will evolve as defenses evolve against him. I would bet on this kid with all my life right now. Just what I've seen from him from an obviously a talent trait standpoint, but more from a grit standpoint. I think this kid has it all. He has the right stuff. And because of that, he'll go back to the drawing board. He'll see what's getting him in trouble. He has really good coaches that will help him identify that. I think his game will evolve. So I think this is going to be a short window of time where teams are able to still pressure him yet confuse him. I think he'll start seeing the patterns and he'll get ahead of the defensive coordinators.
So I like Matt Stafford. I think he's super talented. I think it's a really hard position to play. But I, you know, I was talking about this with the team this morning, and I said, you know, McVay, when he came to L.A. first couple years, they were a run team, a very clever run team, even the jet sweeps, that gave the quarterback the ability to have a lot of layups. About 70% of the throws felt like layups. Now they're not running it as much, and that means the throws are harder. And Matt Stafford's super talented, but this league is hard. And when you don't have a viable run game and you're going, you know, and you're asking your quarterback, now you get like three layups a game, not nine. It's hard. And I think McVay, Trent, you know, who am I to say this, but he's lost himself a little. A little bit of his sauce was power football, not all finesse to me.
Dude, I like it when we disagree. I enjoy these segments more when I feel the polar opposite to your opinions. But this is another one that I absolutely 100% agree with you on. I was just talking to Rosillo about this exact topic, and I went on for like 15 minutes on it. I was like, listen, their DNA, Sean McVay's DNA, is run action. It is not drop back pass. It is creativity in the wide zone run game. The jet sweep became a huge part of that for misdirection. The play action pass off of it, the pocket movement. And this is what made him so hard to defend. Where is it? Like, they've lost themselves in the drop back pass. And when this trade happened, I saw the upgrade in talent. I saw the potential with Matthew Stafford. I'm a huge Stafford fan. I liked it on paper. My concern was exactly what we're seeing. Do you lose yourself in the Matt Stafford passing talent phenomena and just say, oh, we're going to throw the eyeballs at him? Oh, and we're going to go get this other receiver. Remember, they got OBJ when Woods was still healthy. And that just would have been more kerosene on this fire of throwing it too much. And they become too caught up in the drop back pass game. Now, I'm not talking throw numbers, okay? So all you analytics people, I still think it's fine to throw it 35, 40 times. It's how you throw it. The run action game is so powerful in the NFL because your offensive linemen still are going forward. And people forget this too often. When your offensive linemen are going backwards too much, you lose something offensively. You need your bigs to be going forward. They grew up, they fell out of the womb wanting to go forward. They want to go forward. They don't want to go backwards all the time.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're watching the Rams and their offensive line is going backwards all the time. And that's very, very concerning. I wish I disagree with you, but I agree with you 100%.
So explain this to me. It's not a right wrong. You know, nobody can do it on an island. Everybody needs either a great marriage partner or a great advisor. Nobody does this stuff on an island. And it's so funny watching Brady. It's all these years later. God, you give him a healthy Gronk, and he's just like, that's my security. And it's like, if you told me today, Gronk's not available for the playoffs, I'm like, I'm out. It's amazing. So explain this to, I'm sure you had these before. But God, you put a healthy Gronk on the field, Trent, it doesn't matter about Mike Evans. It's just, that's it for him.
I could never have explained this until I played with Shannon Sharpe. Playing with Shannon changed my world because he saw the game like a quarterback. He knew what was going to happen before it happened. He knew what a defense was doing and could read it and adjust mid-play. Ben Coates had him on the same team. Ben was exactly the same way. No wonder Drew threw him so many balls in New England. And I had no idea with this. I was in my eighth year in the NFL until I went, oh my gosh, now I get it. Now, poor kerosene on that experience with Tom and Gronk. I think what you have there, if you're speaking specifically to Gronk, and I think this is true for all of Brady's skill position guys, but especially Gronk. Brady sees the game in calculus. Like, he just sees it. It comes out of his eyeballs, processes through his head in a way that none of us can really understand. He expects the people he trusts the most are the ones that see it close to him. And I think Gronk over the years has learned how to see the game with his eyes, process it as Tom does, and then evolve, change, adapt within a play to be on the same page. We say, think the same thoughts. They got to think the same thoughts. They got to see the world through the same lens. They got to see the play through the same lens. And Tom trusts that Gronk will do that. He trusts that with a few players. And that's why those players get the ball in the most critical situations. I also think Tom's fall, I've not talked to him about this, but you can see it in his game. He's fallen back in love with the play action pass. He started his career that way in New England. They went more to a drop back framework, four or five out passing game stuff. But now with Arians and with Byron, they've gotten him back into this show the ball, put it in the belly, take it back out, turn your back, turn around, make a decisive decision, get the ball down the field. And I think he really likes this. And guess who benefits the most in those situations? The tight end. He's the easiest one to get lost in coverage and play action. I think all this together is why he plays so much more dynamically when Gronk's on the field.
You know, it was interesting watching the Packers yesterday. I said, you know, psychologists have talked about men's ability to compartmentalize. We could hate somebody, but if they're good for our business, we just, you know, we put our head down and we get through it. And, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I've read that multiple times. And Brady and Belichick didn't go to dinner for 20 years, right? And I'm sure you had teammates that drove you nuts, but if they're good for you, they're good for you, right? And I watch Aaron and the Packers, and here's all I know is that Aaron's comfortable. His feet are comfortable. I think he realizes this personnel is really good. I think he realizes that A.J. Dillon, that pick, that was a really good pick. And I don't know, I know that you don't have to love your teammates or love your front office, but I look at Aaron right now and I'm like, that, where in God's name is he going to go where it's a better fit? I think he looks so comfortable now. Your takeaway on that?
I don't think he's going anywhere. I've said that from the beginning. I think he has a unique opportunity to be a Hall of Fame player, multiple Super Bowl winner, and stay with the same franchise his entire career. There's very few that get to do that. I agree with you. I think he, again, I hate that I continue to agree with you, but he looks great. I think part of what makes Aaron comfortable is conflict. If you want to get into the psychology of it, I think Aaron, when he's ornery, when he has that chip on his shoulder, when there's a little bit of conflict in the building, it makes him better. I think it gives him that. And again, I'm not a psychologist, I'm the furthest thing from it, but you can just see that once he can rally the troops, like he needs that conflict because they need to rally for something bigger. They want to have the chip on their shoulder. They want people to doubt him. He wants to be ornery with the media. He wants to put it back in everybody's face. I think that adds a little something to his game, and I think his players rally around him because of that. So I was uberly impressed with them yesterday. I think that defensively they continue to get better, and offensively they're evolving. And I'll say this every time we do the show the rest of the year, look for the offenses that are evolving late in the season. They're the ones that are going to be most dangerous in the NFL, and I see that with the Packers.
By the way, you may not be a psychologist, Trent, but I was reading something this weekend from a business person, and he said it was one of his rules on business. He said you have to find a villain. And if one doesn't exist as you build a business, create one. You have to be chasing. You have to find somebody you think is battling you. He goes, it inspires teammates. It gives you a cause. And I think you're right on that. I think Aaron is so gifted. Sometimes maybe, Trent, it comes easy. And he needs I'm just throwing this out there, that it's so easy for him. Hell, he's not practicing and winning.
Well, one of the biggest issues we're seeing in football right now, this is high school, college, pro, is people are too comfortable. The greats understand without conflict, there's no growth. Now, you have to handle conflict the right way. And in part of this is the villain thing. One of the biggest things, everybody wants comfort. They want easy. They want status quo. They want to know what the day looks like. They want routine. Football at its highest level has conflict. It's edgy. It's uncomfortable. It's about getting better. That's it. It's about being challenged. It's about being outside your comfort zone. And I think if a player like Aaron Rodgers, I agree with you. If he's bored, everybody else is bored. If he's on edge, if he's ornery, if he's chip on his shoulder, if there's a villain out there, guess what? 52 other dudes in the locker room and be like, oh yeah, yeah, he's mad at something. I'm going to be mad at something. Let's go run through a wall and beat whoever we're mad at. And you see it at every level, but we have this kind of, oh, let's everybody just take an exhale and be comfortable and throw rose petals around and feel good about each other and sing kumbaya. And guess what? That might be nice, but you're not going to win a lot of games.
Yeah. Great stuff. Trent Dilfer. Okay. He's got a podcast, Beyond the X's and O's with Trent Dilfer. He also appears on Russillo's, Ryan, my buddy, all the time. So that's a good listen. Hey, it's great seeing you again. And happy Thanksgiving and happy family time over the next couple months, buddy.
And happy Thursday. We play in the state championship, but I'll forgive you for not remembering.
Oh my good Lord. Are you favored? Or, well, I can't ask you that. You're.
I don't think there's an official line on high school football, Colin. You can maybe corner that market, but I don't think there's an official line on high school football.
That was a totally inappropriate question by me. Really inappropriate. All right, buddy. Good luck. Let's go,
McCaffrey. See you, brother.
All right. All right. Yeah. What am I asking Dilfer the line? What the heck's wrong with me?
Well, I mean, you didn't. I don't think you meant to ask him the line.
Like, yeah, I didn't. But it kind of sounded like that.
Better. No, you literally asked him what the line was, but that's not what you meant.
Okay, Joey Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
That was not one of my great moments right there in the history of broadcasting.
To Trent's point about how everybody wants everything to be comfortable, I was watching the Roadrunner, the Anthony Bourdain documentary movie.
How is that?
It's really good. I was watching on the plane after the game last night, and that's like, mediocrity is a sin.
Content.
You don't want to be content. You start getting into too much of a routine, a little challenge every day. Routines are good because you are what you habitually do.
Yeah.
But if you're habitually mediocre, that's what you're going to be.
And I think most people fight conflict, and it's like a little
bit. Conflict is uncomfortable. So you don't want to constantly be in conflict. But a little bit of conflict is going to push you a little bit, which is what you need.
Sometimes I have to tell Anne, I am right and you are wrong, and that will create conflict.
Oh, yeah, that will absolutely create conflict. So the Bengals got a statement win over the Steelers on Sunday.
Wow, and they ran the football.
They sure did. Joe Mixon ran for a career-high 165 yards, 2 touchdowns, 41-10 victory. Ben Roethlisberger had a rough outing. 2 picks and a fumble, and Pittsburgh extended their winless streak to 3 games. This is the first time since 2009, that's when I graduated from college, so that was a very long time ago, that the Bengals have completed a season sweep against the Steelers.
Did you hear Burrow after the game? And everybody was like, you know, and he goes, our standards got to be higher than just beating Pittsburgh. And it wasn't a shot. He wasn't cocky. He was just like, our standard is now, we got to win this whole thing.
I mean, that's everything that we were just talking about, though. Like, if you set your expectations low, the accomplishments that you will reach.
This was the most not just the score. The reason this was so impressive, they played Pittsburgh and pushed Pittsburgh around.
Yes.
It was the way they beat the state. If you'd have changed
and
uniforms.
They could not run the ball. Najee Harris had 23 yards.
And they ran the ball. I mean, if you'd have changed uniforms, that would look like the history of the series.
Yes.
Where a big physical team with a star quarterback turned and hands it off. It was a really big win for Zach Taylor, Joe Burrow, and the Bengals.
Yeah, and we don't talk a lot about Zach Taylor. We really never mention him because Joe Burrow is the face of that organization. Yeah. But this is what growth looks like. This is what happens when you get the guy. This is what happens when you start building a culture. You start making these shifts. It's not just significant that they beat the Steelers, to Joe Burrow's point. They have higher expectations than that. But when you incrementally build and you have a little bit of patience, like, okay, Burrow got hurt, we're going to make some moves, we're going to bring in some new players, going to work things around and be patient with everything and not panicky, that's what happens. And this division is completely different now. And the Steelers are in a position where they have to start looking towards the future, and they don't have it. And it might be a while before they do.
Well, we counted last week. It's depending on how you feel about Matt Ryan. Either 9 or 10 teams need to get better quarterback. And I talked to an NFL executive after the show Wednesday about the quarterback class. And he said, Colin, there is no transformative quarterback in this
There's
class.
No sure thing.
There are players who will get drafted and overdrafted because of the desperation. But he's like, I've seen them all. This is not, that doesn't mean that the Pickett kid from the Pitt Panthers can't win, But nobody here is like, whoa.
No one's a standout prospect.
You don't have Trevor Lawrence, a Justin Fields, or a Trey Lance. Like, they literally pop on camera. You're like watching them and you're like, okay, whoa. Those guys could be stars. That's not what this college class is.
No, the quarterback market is going to be a very desperate one. So the Patriots continue to roll. 36-13 victory over the Titans. This was the game to me. Because the Titans are obviously a very good team. They are very injured right now, but they are a very good team. And this was the one. And now I have to begrudgingly admit that I was... Not wrong. I thought the Patriots were going to be good. I thought they were a playoff team. But, you know, life is back to normal.
You know what, Joey?
Patriots are great again.
There's an upside to everything, the duality of sports. The one upside to Tennessee, I thought, because Tennessee was all beat up. These two may win face again. They may play again. And getting drubbed in Foxborough without some of your best players is not psychologically the worst thing in the world. You know, I was thinking about that, is that there is value in, like, when you lose to a team you may face later, I mean, you lose
badly.
Bad. And I thought, these guys are going to meet again, because I don't think the top end of the AFC is tiny. I think we kind of know who's good. They're not going to be a ton of surprises, and I think they'll meet again.
Well, they were without Derrick Henry, and they were also missing A.J. Brown, Nate Davis, and Rashawn Evans. They're very banged up, as most teams are right now. Yeah. So again, it's not an excuse. The Patriots played a great game. Mac Jones completed over 70% of his passes for the eighth time this season, 310 yards and two touchdowns. The defense, again, amazing, four turnovers, and this was New England's sixth straight win after starting 2-4, and they are 6-1 against AFC opponents this season. So like I said, it's all back to normal. Hope you enjoyed your year off from the Patriots, because they're back in our lives again, like they never left.
Yeah.
So the Rams are currently on a three-game losing streak.
Woo!
Matthew Stafford, in particular, has not played well during that stretch. And after the loss to the Packers, Sean McVay was asked how he previously called out Jared Goff for his poor play. Mm. And would he start doing the same for Matthew Stafford? And McVay did not oblige. He was very passionate defending his quarterback.
Listen, we this is a team game, all right? I'm not interested in revisiting the past and some of the things that haven't always gone the way that we wanted to. There's a lot of different snaps. There's a lot of things that he's done at a high level. When you want to just isolate those individual plays, of course we want to be able to play better. It's not always exclusively on him. And so, we got a guy that's got great ownership. I got great confidence in this guy, and I'm not going to sit here and criticize our players. I don't mean to get upset, but I'm not, you know, this is a very important thing to all of us. I have total confidence and belief in Matthew Stafford.
By the way, he's really good at the podium.
Okay.
Like, he takes ownership of stuff, and I mean,
he's one of the best in the league, but some of this has to fall on Matthew Stafford. Like, that's just, he doesn't have to say it. He may not want to say it publicly or handle things how he did with Jared Goff, which I don't necessarily think that there is a great deal of value in calling out quarterbacks that are truly struggling. I don't know that that helps. I know Bruce Arians has done a little bit of it with Tom Brady. Again, what's the point in comparing anybody to Tom Brady at this point? But look, Matthew Stafford is turning the ball over a lot, and it's got to stop. It's not
like
going to work.
Pick sixes.
Yes.
Like not just fumbles.
Yes,
like, pick sixes.
Literally immediately transferring into points type of turnovers. And not all turnovers are the same. He had four interceptions in his first eight games, and he's now thrown five in his last three games, including three pick sixes, as you mentioned. We're looking at a comparison of the first eight games to the last three, and he is really, really struggling. That's a problem. And this is what I thought. This was my initial thought when Matthew Stafford came to the Rams, because it was like everyone was very excited, and McVay was the hard eyes emoji, and he's going to take them straight to the Super Bowl, and they're going to be unstoppable. And the Rams are a great team, and I'm not saying that that's not still possible. But Matthew Stafford was in Detroit for a long time as this incredible talent, and I know they're very dysfunctional. We are clearly still seeing that.
Yeah.
But now the pressure's on. Now there are no excuses. Now you have McVay that's gone to a Super Bowl with Jared Goff, who is now in Detroit and incapable of winning a game.
Yeah.
So it's got to fall a little bit on Matthew Stafford. Like, this is what it is. You're the quarterbacks. This is what we talk about. So this bubble wrap thing with Matthew Stafford from Detroit, that's off. The training wheels are off.
Very well put.
There's no more bumpers on the lanes. Like, you're in LA, where everybody comes
and wins.
and wins.
Everybody's winning
and
here.
Has a standard of winning, and it is, and it's serious. So we give the quarterbacks all the credit when you're winning. When you're not winning and you are part of the reason, like you're significantly turning the ball over in bad moments and it's not aiding your defense, it's turning into points, it's got to fall on you. Like McVay doesn't have to say it, but that's just what it is.
Bubble wrap. I like that a lot. No bubble wrap on this show. We answer the hard questions with journalism. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm dead serious here. I wonder if Oklahoma football should just admit, let's just do a mulligan on the SEC. We screwed up. We didn't ask Lincoln Riley. He was a great coach. We're better served dominating the Big 12. Instead of going arm in arm with the Texas Longhorns, Oklahoma's a better program historically than the Texas Longhorns. That's a fact. They got more national championships. They've won with like four different coaches, Barry Switzer, Bud Wilkerson, Bob Stoops, Lincoln Riley. Oklahoma's a better program than Texas. Texas is sexier and Austin's cooler and it's got a big brand. Oklahoma's a better football program. You don't need to go anywhere with Texas. You're your own brand. I wonder if Oklahoma honestly this morning thinks, can we just do a mulligan? It's not worked. It hasn't worked. And years ago, the Texas Longhorns created the Longhorn Network. And a year into it, I worked at another network that was part of it. And Texas knew instantly, oh, crap, we got all these cameras around our practice. Mac Brown was like, I'm doing six interviews a week. They knew instantly the Longhorn Network was a pain in the butt. And they knew it instantly. And sometimes you just have to go, time out. That grand idea was a bad idea. It's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. But this Oklahoma to the SEC, Oklahoma's football program now is like, now the good news is there's a bunch of good coaches out there. I'd call Matt Rhule at Carolina. That team's Christian McCaffrey's now out for the year. There's Matt Campbell at Iowa State. But sometimes, you know, I say this a lot. Don't get happier than happy. And being in the Big 12 and being a top 7 program and winning a bunch of games and being able to beat Texas annually, it's a great place to be. Nah, now we're going to go over to the SEC. Sometimes you just be like, that's a bad shot. I sliced that right into the roof. I take it. Mulligan, I get that one back. That wasn't a good idea. You see companies do this all the time. You've seen Nike do it, Apple do it, Amazon do it. You buy a company and you're like, the synergy doesn't work. We're going to sell that puppy. We just made a big mistake. It's okay. I'd rather you be aggressive and occasionally make a mistake, you know, and just own it. But don't double down on it. That Oklahoma to the SEC thing, it reeks of...
Well, what are you going to do now? You don't have your guy. I mean, you might get another guy, to your point. It's still a great job, but is it as good of a job now that you are going to the SEC?
I don't know. I will say this, for all the, I watched the entire Colts-Bucks game, and I thought the Colts would figure it out. For all the greatness of Brady, it is remarkable to watch him. He's a creature of habit, and that's okay. I tend to be a creature of habit. I married a woman who's an artist and a designer, so she pulls me out of my habits and makes me, she forces me to do things I wouldn't normally do. And I think Bruce Arians did that with Tom Brady. He forced him out of his habits and going to make you a little uncomfortable. We're going to ask you to throw the ball down the field. But when you watch Brady play, when he's got a running game in Fournette and a healthy Gronk, this looks like New England with speed on the outside. It really does. When you watched him play yesterday, I'm like, this looks so much like New England. The difference is they got a Mike Evans. You got to double him in the red zone. You used to be able to double Gronk in the red zone. Now you got to double Mike Evans in the red zone, Chris Godwin. So it is great. You know, it's like the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan. They had a bunch of centers. They had a bunch of shooters. They had a bunch of forwards. But the Jordan Pippen thing, Batman Robin, he got Michael. He got his strengths. He got his personality. He got his ego. Like, that was perfect. You know, this is where Pippen deserves credit. The Bulls had a lot of different stuff. Forwards, centers, shooters, Euros. But the Pippen thing was always perfect for Michael. Scotty understood. I'm Robin here. I'm Robin. And he's the best Robin arguably ever. It's like those great Yankee teams with Mariano Rivera. As great as they were, they had power hitters. They had great starters. You just hand the ball with three or four outs to go to Mariano. It's all good. It's just certain players just, Gronk and Brady, Pippen and Jordan, Mariano to the Yankee teams. There's just certain guys that just, we're all good here. It's all going to be okay. Hour 3 next.